manage
to. There's no intake person located at the present.
Yeah, our people are here for free. I just wanted to introduce myself. We have three there right now, and then the two for the community. We're funded.
What are you doing?
That's our grant from Iowa County. And so we have a little recording.
Yeah, it's recording right now, I think.
Because in the community, it's kind of like.
It doesn't exist because the doors aren't open, like how it was presented.
That's what I mean.
But we are taking referrals from ED because we don't stop doing that.
What happened if they never opened the door?
That was present. We've had a couple of.
So this is what happens if it's not ready at 4:30.
Okay.
Everyone just forgets. I like Dolores' hair tonight.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Now it's on.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me now? Welcome to the Mental Health Board meeting. We're sorry about our short delay, but we had some technical difficulties, and Stephanie got them worked out.
Lance, actually.
Stephanie, can we have the roll call?
Island Danovy. Astrid Berkson. Julian Rappaport. Deborah Townsend.
Here.
Tom Moore. Susan Fowler.
Here.
Dolores Henry.
Here.
Bill Gleason.
Here.
Mike McClellan.
Thank you. At this time, do we have any citizen input? Bruce, do you have anything? Sheila? I see a Head Start person. Do you have something?
No.
Okay. Sheila?
I do want to mention.
You should go to the mic.
Oh, she could take that.
I think it is important. I was talking with Dolores just briefly about the fact that I wanted to make sure that I said that our folks in terms of the CRC and operating at presence, there are a number of agencies that are operating in the CRC, but the CRC doors are not open. And I think it's important for people to know that that's still a barrier and that we're still working really hard to do that. And some of the reasons for that are they aren't prepared for staffing, and they did have some safety issues that they wanted to address as well. But Mike Brown, the CEO, had redirected all of his staff to work with people in the emergency department specifically. And so they weren't really prepared for people to come through the front, so.
We're gonna introduce our new board member later, but could you explain what the CRC is? Because I don't think, and let's not use acronyms for now.
Thank you. I know. It's our lexicon is all acronyms. The CRC is a community resource center and is currently located at the Presence Covenant Hospital. And it used to be the site that was used for the cancer center, if you're familiar with the campus. But now it is full signage. However, the doors aren't open yet. And so inside is a number of providers, including Community Elements. Healthcare Consumers is doing some work there. There is a provider from, I think it's Lutheran Social Services, a clinician, excuse me for not remembering. And then they do have a contract that they're working on with the Champaign County Christian Health Center to have some clinics operating there eventually, so.
Thank you, Sheila. Is there anything else? Okay, if not, we'll do the developmental disabilities information.
Yes, the Developmental Disabilities Board is going to have a retreat this Saturday. The plan at this point, it will begin at about 8:30, or I think, 8:15?
We posted 8:15.
Okay, 8:15 it starts. The purpose, what this is going to do is two major things. The intent is to try to come to some agreement concerning basic principles that everyone is in agreement with and do some visioning. And in addition to that, we are going to talk about the system issues that are facing the intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities world at this point, and how that impacts on the systems and what problems that present for us locally. So this will be interesting. This is the first time we've ever had a retreat. Mental Health Board might at some point want to think about that as something that's available to us. So I'm hopeful, and we will report back on what is decided. I think it'll be an interesting exercise.
Thank you. Darlene, did you have some comments?
No, I'm just here.
Okay. You came to the microphone. I thought that meant you had some comments. Okay, now we have to approve the minutes from the board meeting of November 20th, 2013. I need a motion and a second to approve. Okay, now is there any discussion or any changes or corrections that need to be made? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. At this time, we have the president's comments. So I have a couple comments. Happy New Year to everybody. We made it to a new year. As far as the Mental Health Board is concerned, I thought we had a very productive 2013. We had a lot of initiatives that we implemented. CRC was one that we did our part, but some of our partners obviously haven't done their part. We got the Youth Assessment Center up and going. We got a very good report from PLL. We got very good data feedback from Project Access. So I think we had a good year overall. So 2014 should be a better year for us. And the second thing I would like to say is put your singing hats on, because Tracy Parsons is having a birthday today. And you know, growing up, he never let them sing happy birthday, so we have to do that. Okay, who's our vocalist here?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tracy. Happy birthday to you.
How many?
52.
Oh, that's a good year.
That's a good age, isn't it?
Oh, it's a very good age.
Yes. Okay, the next agenda item is to introduce our new board member, Dr. Susan Fowler. Would you like to say a couple of comments about you and your background and your interest to serve on this wonderful board?
Absolutely. I have a PhD in developmental and child psychology, and have been interested across my career in children with behavioral disorders, as well as children with other disabilities like autism. I focus primarily on children birth to six, but as a parent, I've gone up in the age range because I have a son with a dual diagnosis. I work at the university as a professor in the Department of Special Education, and one of my responsibilities besides teaching and advising students is to run a number of large clearinghouses or resource centers for the Illinois State Board of Education and the Illinois Department of Human Services, focused on services for children birth to five. So the Early Intervention Clearinghouse, the Illinois Early Learning Project, which is for pre-K teachers, childcare providers, and the Early Childhood Asset Map, which allows us to write reports on risk factors and other things at the county level and at the state level. So I'm on the board to learn more about services in Champaign County. I have something of a vested interest as a parent, but I don't have a specific issue that I plan to advocate. I'm really here to learn and gain information and then to try and provide reasoned feedback.
Thank you, and we really look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
I was in the special ed department a long time ago before it was even in the College of Ed. Lord Jordan was my advisor, so it's near and dear to my heart, too.
Yeah.
I was a grad student,
We're having our 50th anniversary this spring.
Well, I was probably 1 year. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Do we have any comments from our executive director today?
The only comment that I have has to do with the 1115 waiver, which is, I really can't give you a better name for it than what it is. It is a waiver, a Medicaid waiver, that allows the state, that the state is proposing to collapse a variety of existing waivers, and they say that it will be helpful. I think that you will have a bunch of comments. I think we have the Equip for Quality comments. The association has made, our association has made comments on the proposed waiver. And by the way, it has not been passed by the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services at this point. So, you know, we don't know if it's going to pass. It is getting a lot of press around the country, actually, because it does blaze some new territory. One of the things that it allows for or is proposing has to do with workforce development kinds of things and, in salaries related to direct service staff, which is a huge problem. It also incentivizes changing nursing homes and hospitals at this point. My major concern is that, at least with the waivers we had, we knew what we had. This way, when you fold it in and you have new players like the Hospital Association and the various associations that represent nursing homes, it seems to me we have more competition at this point. And if it's budget neutral, anyway, that's all. I think it's something we need to pay attention to, and we will keep the board informed as things unfold.
I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about it, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peter. We have staff reports in our packet, but at this time, if Tracy or Lynn would like to further comment, you can. Do you have any? Okay. All right. Do we have any board-to-board reports? Deb?
Yes, I'd like to report some very good news about the Children's Advocacy Center, the CAC. The 2nd of January, we got two articles in the paper. Maybe you saw them, because there was a picture, too. And the reason for these articles is that, one, we've been given about $10,000 from the Penn State University fine that they have to pay for
child abuse.
For child abuse. And so that's really nice. And we've hired Bunyard. Oh, what's her name? What's her first name?
She came to visit at one of our meetings, but I don't remember her first name.
Well, I've never met her, but she's so well experienced. Well, anyway, when I find it, I'll say. Her first name is. Anyway, she is a retired police detective, and we've hired her to be a professional, a forensic interviewer. And that's going to be a huge help. And the money we get from the Penn State thing will pay for her for 1 year. So we'll have to figure out how to keep her, assuming that it goes well. So far, so good. The other is that we've gotten some money made in honor of a woman who died in order to help fix up the room where children in crisis tell their stories. And that, you know, the room was just all scattered and there was a whole lot of stuff. I don't know if you've seen it, but Adelaide's fixing it up and replacing some of the old nasty toys that, you know, and some of the furniture that isn't appropriate anymore and so on. So we're very pleased with those two things.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, I didn't even use it. Could you hear me?
Yes. Are there other board-to-board reports? Julian? Turn it on, please.
I guess it goes off if you don't attend to it for a while. Anyway, hello. Is it, we're on there? Okay. So Lynn and Mark have also been attending the meetings that are held pretty regularly now with all the police departments in the county. And, you know, and we've been pretty active in helping, and Sheila attends those meetings, of course, because the collaboration between the police and community elements in creating crisis response to people, mentally ill people, getting in trouble with the law. The progress there is, I think, highly promising. I have continued to be deeply impressed by this, at least the fairly large number of police officers who come to this meeting and their desire to do something other than lock people up. And so they now have they're about to, probably in March, do training, kind of refreshing, and also new CIT officers to have a countywide policy that will be consistent across the various departments and so on. And I think, quite impressive that the law enforcement interest in this problem. So it's an interesting, I've been observing it all along from before we got involved in any direct way. And I've seen tremendous progress. So that's really nice to know.
That's encouraging. Do we have Susan?
I'd just like to add a comment that I didn't know much about CIT until last spring, and I had the opportunity to have a family member's name placed on it, and the police did come out for a crisis. They were wonderful. They de-escalated, they calmed things down. It was a very supportive, encouraging kind of event rather than a scary. So, yeah.
It's Mary Bunyard. I want you to know that.
Any other board-to-board reports?
Well, thank you all. And now we have agency information. If you have anything that you would like to share. Well, I'll put Darlene on the spot. Can you update us on the youth assessment really quickly? I know you do have some updates.
Yeah, I can. We've been operating now since October. And so we're starting to collect our very first data on follow-up because we follow kids after they're in our services once they complete their mediation, or if they don't have a mediation, if we refer them on to other services, if they're not a court-involved kid. And so we're beginning now at the three-month point to be able to start collecting some follow-up data. So I'm just letting you know that. We're on target with our projections for how many kids we'll serve. We're about at 300 at this point for the year, for the first 3 months. That includes the data from July through September when we were only doing court diversion. which was a very much smaller number. We've really expanded our referrals from the police. Even the kids that are put on station adjustment have increased, only because the police now have some place to take them. So they're starting to pay attention to some things they didn't before. Most of those kids are all being diverted, so they're all being referred to other services or diverted into diversion activities, and hopefully getting early intervention kind of thing. So I'll have further, you know, at the end of the first year, we'll have our first follow-up data that you'll be able to see, actually some of the outcomes of the intervention and where the kids, how the kids are ending up.
Thanks. Peter, you have a question?
I was just curious, how are things playing out in terms of when kids are presented? Are you seeing any patterns, and are there any, like, really late night, or, like, what was Christmas like, for example?
Well, what I can tell you is that when the kids are out of school, there's a few more activities going on because they were hanging out at the mall or those kind of things. We have, our office hours for the youth center are till midnight most nights of the week, and even on Saturdays. We are not seeing as many drop-offs as we expected to see after 10 o'clock in the evening. We had a meeting last week with the state's attorney's office and all the police jurisdictions to just talk about the referral process. We are getting lots more referrals, but not as many kids dropped off as we thought we would. And so we're talking about why they're dropping kids off or why they're not dropping kids off. And then what hours, if they think it's important that we stay open that late, et cetera. We're just trying to assess all of that. It's 3 months of experience so far, so not a lot, but we're starting to get some feedback on that. The other thing that has changed that is a little bit of a process improvement is that as of this week, our staff have access to the police databases for the arrest records. So we're able to exchange information with the Champaign-Urbana a state's attorney through their actual online, which they've all been able to do. We just haven't had access to it. So last week they gave us access to that as well. So that will exchange a lot of information without them having to fax back and forth or email back and forth information, which I think it will help. We were starting to get a little concerned about encryption of personal data and things like that. So this will just save all of that. And that was actually Julia's suggestion, just go ahead and put us on. So that, I think, will be an improvement.
One other question. What's the mix between kids that are involved with criminal charges versus status offenses? And are things working out okay with the Comprehensive Community-Based Youth Service Agency for the status offenders?
Yes. We have received quite a few kids that are not put on station adjustment at all. I will say, however, that most of the youth are still being brought in by the police as opposed to referred by schools or other community agencies. And a lot of those are runaways and other kinds of kids that just were not being seen before. But still, the majority of our referrals are coming from police jurisdictions, and whether or not they're put on a station adjustment is dependent on what they're there for.
Truancy was a big concern. Are you getting any truants?
We are getting some truants. We actually have a meeting next week with Regina Parnell from the regional office because she handles the truancy board for them, and trying to figure out how to better do referrals. The process has always been in place to do that, but it's not been used well.
Thank you. At this time, we have to accept our claims report that's already in the packets. So I just need a person to make a motion to accept and a second.
I move we accept the claims report as presented by Nancy Parker.
I need a second.
Second.
All right, it has been moved and second to accept the claims report. Is there any comment or question that anybody has about the report? Okay, if not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That means it got approved, Nancy. Accept it. Now we're down to new business. We have election of officers tonight. We have the board president position open and the vice president / secretary position. And this is an action item. So we're open for nominations.
I'd like to nominate Dolores Henry for president.
I'll second that.
It has been moved and second that I stay in the president's position. Are there any other nominations? Okay. Does somebody want to move that we close the nominations? Second.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and second that we close nominations. So do we have to actually have an election?
I think we have to have a
roll. Okay, let's have a roll call. Stephanie?
No, it just can be.
Just a vote.
Do we just vote yes? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Oppose?
Don't let the power go to your head.
Okay, the next position is vice president, and I would like to nominate Dr. Deborah Townsend. It's been moved and second. Are there other nominations for vice president / secretary? Okay, hearing none, I would like to make a motion to close nominations. It's been moved and second that we close nominations. All in favor of Dr. Townsend for vice president / secretary, vote aye.
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 Any opposed? Wow. Okay, so.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll do our best to serve the board well. Thank you. Okay, now the next item of business is the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board, and the quarter sent a notice of funding availability. And it's basically letting everybody know that we had a publication in the News Gazette on December 15, 2013, and that's included in the packet. The next area is a progress report. We're just so happy to have Chandra Somerville here to do this report and to have Darlene Kleppel helping her with this report. And it is the Access Initiative Cultural and Linguistic report, and we should have a copy on our table here. And I think there's some copies at the sign-in sheet, too.
I'll help distribute it, maybe I didn't
copy. Okay. So it's a thick packet, so we have enough time, Chandra.
Okay. Okay. So the packet that you all have is actually looks are very deceiving. What I've provided for you is the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint is not long, but it's pretty detailed. What I've also provided for you was updated information and research that has been put out by the Technical Assistance Partnership, and it's an actual blueprint on reducing disparities and disproportionality. In addition, I have provided a copy of the Health and Human Services Action Plan on reducing health and healthcare disparities. So you all have that as a resource for you. And I'll be talking not to extend about those things, but they are updated resources that are available to us as we make the decision to move forward in cultural and linguistic competence. So I just wanted to remind us that cultural and linguistic competence is not a trip. It's definitely a journey, not a destination. So we've been traveling this road a long time. And in your board packet, I have provided you a timeline of our journey that we have taken that started way, way before I came. We started as the Mental Health Board probably about 10 years ago. So as you noticed, in 2003, Dr. Carl Bell actually came and provided us with a consultation on what we needed to do to begin to look at disparities and disproportionality in our community. And we were able to then begin to get deliverables from the Mental Health Board funded agencies on cultural sensitivity plans. And I can honestly say they have definitely grown and definitely developed
over time. What I'm going to be providing you today is just an overview of the process as well as accomplishments that have actually happened. And then we'll also talk about the reporting progress of agencies. I have not listed them individually. What I did was provided you an overview of who's actually reported annually, who's actually provided, and who actually has not. So it's not listed by names, and it's broken up by Developmental Disability Board and Mental Health Board funded agencies. So that's how it will be provided to you. I also have provided you some actual lessons learned and as well as some implementation that has actually been done and reported quarterly by the agencies as well. And then the updated research that you all have and reports on disparities and disproportionality. And then we'll have some time for questions. Is there anything that you would like to see me go over or that you had questions about from the briefing memo that I'll be able to address? Be sure to make sure that you ask me those so that I can clarify or make any clarifications. One thing that I've learned from Peter about draft is that you can always make changes and updates to it. So this was the best to my ability and the information that I had about the journey of cultural competence from my perspective and the information that I have given. If you have some additional information or if I've missed something out or have made some mistakes, please feel free to let me know and I'll be able to provide that for you. So just to kind of review, I had to make sure that I provided you the definition of cultural and linguistic competence. This is where I have been operating from. This is where all organizations, you can ask any organization if I've gone and done a presentation, this is the definition of cultural and linguistic competence that I have provided for them. So it's the state of being able to function effectively in context of cross-cultural differences, and that's cultural competence. And linguistic competence is the ability to provide information in a manner that can be understood by diverse audiences and groups, and this includes language, literacy, and communication style. So this is the baseline of definitions that all organizations that are funded by the Mental Health Board and Developmental Disabilities Board, this is what they are operating from. Disproportionality, this is more of a broader definition that the Mental Health Board and Developmental Disability Board agencies are operating. But one of the things that we do want to make sure that is highlighted is that it does refer to over and under representation of a given population or group, often that's defined by racial and ethnic backgrounds. What has been included is it's also defined by socioeconomic status, national origin, English proficiency, gender, sexual orientation, and specific population and category. That is an area that has been broadened since we first started, because we first began to look at only race and ethnicity. We've kind of incorporated that to include other backgrounds as well. Disparities, the condition or fact of being unequal, and examples of that are healthcare disparities, making sure that they're, when there's not quality health care that is provided, not access to healthy food in poor neighborhoods, underdiagnosis and overdiagnosis. We've definitely talked about that being a disparity in our community, and no equal access to mental health services. So one of the things that in this position, in this role that I acquired in 2009, when they funded the position, I basically had a binder full of cultural competence plans and a couple of consultation reports, but nothing else was what I was provided with. But I was empowered to say, you're going to be the expert. You're the one that's going to develop what this is going to look like moving forward. So being nervous and scared in my boots, what I did was begin to say, well, do organizations even understand what they actually have, why they're reporting this? So I did my own little,
secret call and screening to see if organizations and agencies, their representatives, not just the people submitting the grants, but your front desk personnel, your middle management, your direct care staff, if they even knew that there was a cultural and linguistic competence plan that existed within the agency. Once that was established, and once that was established, that is where my baseline was building awareness. Oftentimes what happens in communities when people are trying to implement cultural and linguistic competence, you get different ideas, different points of view, and most of all, there can be some conflict because there are different opinions on what it should actually look like. What I thought was fair, particularly to the agency, was one, let's build awareness. Building awareness is a key thing that will keep everyone equitable, that will keep it all even, and also it will balance out the power within the organizations because no one has a one-up. Everyone is aware. So that was one of my places that I started. The next place that I began was actually looking at templates, because what was happening was every agency was beginning to report on different things. So what was provided, the support I provided, was I actually looked and developed a standard template and reporting form that actually had actions, the time frame, a person responsible, and benchmarks. This way, there could be clear-cut actions where someone could say, okay, here are the activities that we're doing to promote cultural and linguistic competence. Also, when that is in the air, sometimes there's not an actual person responsible. So there were key people, but not just a single person. It was maybe a group of people, maybe management, board of directors that was actually responsible for it implementing. And then we had benchmarks. One of the things that everyone was able to provide was different levels of how they could progress. I did recognize that everyone was not going to start at the same place and everyone was not going to report on the same things. There were some people who were more advanced. There were people who did not have as much exposure. So it was basically about ensuring that it was equitable for everyone. Additional support was technical assistance and consultation. I remember the first meeting that we just had, a CLC discussion. There was lots of, it was lots of diverse opinions and lots of people not smiling because there was a lot of concern on, so what is it that we're going to have to do? Are we going to just have to keep reporting and where is this going? So I assured them that one of the things it would do was begin to look at how you access your services and how can the community access your service. But most of all, you as an organization is going to be able to build additional camaraderie, and also your communication structure is going to begin to tighten up well. And definitely, as people have reported, that was one of those positive things that have happened. Also, I provided training in this position on actually different ways that you can report. And then last year, I did face-to-face coordinator site visits where I went out to each of the individual agencies and got a chance to know more about what they were doing and if I could provide additional support. So if you notice, the Mental Health Board actually came up with standard guidelines that we wanted people to begin to look at. This was a baseline so that people can begin to say, okay, where do we start? So we started at the policy and governance level. And so one of the areas was to develop and review a cultural competence plan biannually with feedback from management staff, the direct staff, and individuals served by the organization. What this did was it just kept it out of the hands of the person who was applying for the grant or the money from the Mental Health Board. It was an opportunity to get people at all levels involved in the implementation of cultural competence. This also had an opportunity for the board to become aware. A lot of board members were not aware of the cultural competence plan and what I found out in conversations with organizations. Also, there was not a clear policy developed on timely provision of interpretation services. There was access to saying, hey, we can provide an interpreter, but there was not necessarily a policy. So it was encouraged and recommended that this be one of the standard reporting guidelines. Also, conducting an annual organization cultural competence self-assessment. This was actually one of the areas that a lot of organizations had done. They had done a self-assessment, but what they had not done was done it organizationally with the staff. So this was done on the policy level. And then to begin to identify and recruit diverse membership on their board of directors, and also complete cultural competence training. So this was standard reporting on the governance and policy level. On the management level, it was to access and modify the physical facility to ensure accessibility so that it can reflect the population of focus, but also be welcoming, clean, and attractive by providing cultural art magazines, toys, et cetera. In particular, there was one organization that did a major facelift. I remember coming there before and seeing no magazines. When I came there to visit, they had painted. There was art that was all over that was reflective of all types of cultures. And most of all, it was not a sterile environment. It was very therapeutic and kind of like a home-like environment where people would want to come and access services. So that was like a change over a matter of about 3 years from when I had been in the actual organization. And when I went for my site visit, it was one of those improvements that was noticeable to my eyes. Another thing was making sure that services were offered in community-based settings. This was an area that was recommended by the Surgeon General's report, as well as from Dr. Carl Bell and Dr. Harry Shallcross. They actually looked at ways that you could provide services in alternative locations. So we have school-based services. We have things where we have services provided in areas where people can access them through bus, in places where they don't have to normally go to a traditional office, but you can go to non-traditional settings. So that was one of the standards that we wanted people to begin to look at and report on. Also establish a plan to support incentives for supervisors and workers. Oftentimes when people look at cultural and linguistic competence, before they were looking at who they were serving, not necessarily providing incentives for the workers. So one of the things that we encouraged and wanted people to look at was how they were going to support their workers. And also ensuring that there was cultural competence training for the management as well. Direct service similarities. One of the things that was unique was making sure that people wrote in their charts and began documenting on strength base. Now, I was not able to, just because of confidentiality and releases, I was not able to monitor this progress, but it was encouraged and provided tools and resources on how people can begin to look at how clients can look at their file 10 years from now and not see that their counselor reported negative things about them. So it was one of those areas, and when I say negative things, where it was not strength-based, where it was not focusing on the strengths of the person whom they were serving. Another thing was identifying natural and informal supports. Oftentimes we want to look at formal supports, but this way, when you're being culturally responsive, this was going to begin to have organizations look at ways they can identify natural supports for the family and how they recover or they plan for their treatment. As far as for individuals and their families, we encouraged organizations to begin to construct an advisory board so that it can begin to have the consumer voice or the client and individual and family voice that is provided by them so that you can begin to get
access to information from people who are actually receiving the services. Also, making sure that they can review information to ensure that it's easily understood, and also partnering with direct service teams to ensure that outreach events are in places where there's the actual population is being served. So these were the standard reporting that all of the organizations kind of reported on for this full year quarterly. So the requirement, there are 21 agencies that are funded by the Mental Health Board and 7 funded by the Developmental Disability Boards. The reporting requirement was that all applicants must submit a cultural competence plan, and all funded agencies are required to report on their quarterly progress. So for FY13, if you notice, 16 of the 21 agencies have actually reported, and of the funded agencies by the Mental Health Board, and six of the 7 were by the Developmental Disability Boards, for a total of 78% actually have reported. Those that have not reported, 5 of the 21 agencies for Mental Health Board, and 1 of the Developmental Disability Board. So 6 of the 28 total orgs have not actually reported on their progress quarterly. I can speak a little bit about that, or just even support on why it may not have happened. It could have been communication. It could have been maybe there are a lack of awareness. And so I do have some suggestions on where we can ensure that everyone is aware of that reporting requirement. I do know that there are some that do report on their program plan, but just may not be aware that they're required to report on the cultural competence. So it's just a matter of continued building awareness. But I can honestly say where this was not reported at all to 78%, I can honestly say that this was progress. Definite progress. So some examples of implementation, and these are not all of the things that have been implemented. There's definitely a lot more things that have been implemented, but this is kind of like an overarching of implementation strategies that people have done to infuse cultural competence within their organization. We actually have youth serving on boards within agencies now. Boards have increased diverse membership by about 35%. There have been at least 8 hours of paid time for cultural and diversity training that has been provided for all of the agencies. Also, EAP and mental health days have been provided to produce burnout. So that has come from the policy and decision making, from management. There's actually been cultural competence committees that have been established within the agencies. They've actually developed implementation plans on how to recruit for diverse new hires. So this is not just looking in your traditional settings. This is going to non-traditional settings, actually looking at ways to look for people of diverse backgrounds into the fields, and also implementing agency-wide cultural competence assessments. Other examples, the CLC plan has been reviewed and signed, and this is direct staff. Cultural competence training as a part of orientation. Customer client satisfaction surveys were provided for every client. And children and family members were not used as interpreters. This is really, really important, because what was happening was that family members were beginning to be interpreters and providing services, or the kids were providing interpretation services for the family. And what is that? Not that is not best practice. Best practice is ensuring that there is a certified interpreter or licensed interpreter to ensure that the right terminology is being communicated. Now, if the person is Spanish speaking or is French speaking, that is a staff person, that is a way to produce that is a way to make sure that there is communication. But when there's formal meetings, it really should be a licensed interpreter or someone that is able to provide the proper communication for what is being communicated in mental health meetings or medical meetings. Also, on the client level, things that have been implemented, families were able to present service satisfaction at annual board meetings, and also families and youth have developed an advisory committee to board of directors. Also, youth and families have developed an acronym and glossary guide to ensure that terms were easily understood. So these are examples on the four levels that they have been implemented. So in this process, there's some clear lessons that I've learned or that I've learned about the process or the other ways that organizations have communicated. And one of the areas that was huge was clear communication about CLC and a clear definition was needed to establish a baseline. When I asked people's perceptions on what CLC was when I first started, I got about 10 different ones, and that was 10 different people within three different organizations. So that's when I began to notice that we need to begin to have a clear definition. So in all of the reporting forms, the clear definition of cultural and linguistic competence is on all of the forms that are downloadable from the site where you do go and apply. The process of adaptive change can be frustrating. This is not something that we're just trying to do where we're going to stamp and just check it off. It has been frustrating for a lot of the organizations, the reporting requirements, different things like that, and just making sure that we provide them with support. And I provided with them support on how to make sure that it is not as frustrating. Also, lessons learned is that CLC is responsible of everyone, not just the CLC coordinator. And so that was one of the areas that was communicated. Another area that I've learned is that the disproportionality in juvenile justice system and alternative school suspensions and alternative education, this rate is still high. So we need to continue to address this as a community and begin to get our judicial system involved. Also, agencies were very appreciative and very open to the support of the CLC position and the resources that were provided. I never was told, go away, don't call us, don't tell us what to do, we got this. They have been very open and very receptive to the technical assistance that was provided. Also, cultural competence is about being self-aware about personal biases that impact the quality of care. It's not necessarily the amount of tokens you may have on your boards or the color that may not be in your organizations. It's really about the quality of care. And that was one of the messages that that I consistently ensured that we were beginning to communicate to organizations. Also, without implementation of the funding requirements, there may not have been any progress. So I really thank Peter and the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Boards to ensure that this was a part of funding requirements, because I'm not sure how much progress we actually would have made. Also, a lesson that I'm learning is that demographic and data collection on ethnicity and race are not driving decisions necessarily about the services that are being offered. And so this is not being captured through our current information that we're collecting now. So maybe looking at a way where maybe the information that they're providing or the utilization and the demographic information, if that's driving the services that are providing, then we need to begin to see about how we can report that. Things that are new, there is actually 2013,
There were enhanced national class standards. These are culturally and linguistically appropriate service standards that are actually out that have been developed by the Department of Health and Human Services, the Office of Minority Health, and they actually took the standards to address them with your action plan to reduce racial and health disparities. So there are actual standards that look at, that are aligning with this plan. So that's some of the information that's new. Also, the blueprint, and I've provided that for you all as well, to reduce disparities and disproportionality in human services and behavioral health care. So what I'd like to see moving forward of what we can do next as a community and as a mental health board, I'd like to provide for you in June of 2014 an actual yearly progress of all of the funded agencies so that you can begin to see overall the changes that are happening. Also present recommendations on the sustainability plan for CLC monitoring and technical assistance. And this will be a collaboration from the CLC community committee that has been put in place. And also provide examples of where CLC has actually sustained in other communities across the country. We have one example in Monroe County. They were a system of care. They actually developed a department countywide. And then also I'll continue to provide support for local agencies as they continue their journey for CLC. So I have my contact information here for you. And then I also provided you the resource to Think Health, Cultural Health. And this is for the Department of Health and Human Services. And so you can go there and look at additional resources and training materials so that we can continue to implement CLC successfully in our community. Are there any questions that you might have?
Well, thank you very much. It was a very enlightening presentation, and I'm sure we all have questions, but asterisks first.
In the definition of this, you said it was to teach people to be able to communicate across cultural lines and so on. But what about, I mean, for communication, it has to go both ways. What about understanding across cultural lines as well?
I think that goes back to the self-awareness and being willing to ask questions. So if you go back to the definition of cultural competence, it's the state of being able to function effectively in cross-cultural contexts and differences. But I think it also goes back to awareness. And that's a new term that's out there called cultural humility. And that's the one where I can't make you change. None of us can make anybody change. But it's really about how are we aware of our own personal biases and how are they impacting our services and our care that we're providing to people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Under what's new, you mentioned enhanced standards.
Okay, I'm gonna put Darlene to work now.
Well, could you give me an example of what an enhanced standard might be?
Yes. Can you pass that around, please? So in 2000, there were actual about 10 different standards that gave us a baseline on how you could provide culturally and linguistically appropriate services. In 2013, they actually reviewed those, and that's what's coming around now, that actually looked at it from a more foundational standpoint. So they looked at the principal standard being that you would provide effective, equitable, and understandable and respectful quality care and services that are responsive for diverse
cultural health populations, but then it's looking at governance and leadership and workforce communication and language assistance, and also engagement and quality, continuous quality improvement and accountability. So when I said about what's new, those are the new enhanced standards that are out now that were distributed by the Office of Minority Health and Human Health and Services.
Julian?
It's a great report, and your optimism and enthusiasm is nice to see. What I'm not clear about, because it just seems that I don't understand the why here, the 20% or the 5 or 6 agencies who are not reporting this, how can that be, given that it's required for them to do it, and we're monitoring it, and so, like, what's the reason? I don't understand it.
And that's...
And are there consequences? I guess I'm going
to... I don't know, because that's not my role. My role is more so to provide support, because I'm not an employee of the Mental Health Board. I can provide them with the information. And so now we're at a point is, do we begin to provide that information on who's not and who is? I do know that for when quarterly reporting for program plans is not done, there is a notice of suspension that goes out. Will that begin put in place for the cultural competence plans? I don't know. That's a decision that will have to be made, but I'm not sure of that.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something for us to discuss.
It is.
Which we may or may not want to do now. I don't know.
That is one point. The other thing that the board might want to consider is that as part of the application process, we require that there be a plan, but we've really never used that as criteria for decisions related to who we fund or that's an area that we've talked about from time to time, but we've sort of not taken a hard line on this stuff. We've seen this as a process. We've tried to make sure that people were moving ahead. The question becomes, when do you when do you put some more teeth behind it? I guess.
I hope that's a discussion we'll have a time to have.
Well, personally, I just don't see the value of having a plan if we're not going to leverage the agencies to implement a plan and do a plan. And I just don't see how we could have a policy that you have to have a plan, and then you have these other 7 agencies who haven't taken the time to even write a plan.
They have written a plan because it's required in order to receive funding. What they have not done is they have not reported quarterly. That's a difference. And it just started for fiscal 13.
Okay, so everybody has a plan.
Everybody 100%. Has a plan. That was implemented 2003, that everybody had to have a plan in order to apply. What we did was we began to boost up the accountability and reporting on the action, not just it being a document that goes into a drawer and you don't look at it again, but that you're revisiting it so that you can see it as a value. And I'm not saying that they're not doing it. Those agencies just aren't reporting on it.
So does that mean that Mark, Lynn, and Peter need to leverage these agencies to get the reports in, since you don't have the ability to leverage them?
Well, I can tell them, and I'm sure they'll support me. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't think you should just let it go, because it's not fair to agencies who are following the rules. I mean, the funding is very important, and we have tons of needs in the community. So as a minimum, something that in this community, how could you live day by day and not see this as a multi-ethnic, multicultural community? I mean, it's a given that they know they need to do something and let you know what they're doing, because certainly they have to offer services to this very, very, very diverse community.
I'm going to confess ignorance because I wasn't aware that we were not getting the reports. If that's a contractual requirement, we should send out a notice of deficiency on those on those also. And so would you please let us know which ones haven't reported, and we'll make sure that that those go out.
Yes. And thank you for your work, Chandra. It was a very good presentation. Do we have other comments?
And I just want to say, I mean, this is just honestly, the organizations have really been, really been open to the support. And one of their concerns they've asked was, what's going to happen when Access Initiative goes away? And I told them, I said, well, the Mental Health Board has definitely seen this as a priority. So one of the next things will be talking about sustainability of what that will look like for the support for the agencies as well. That's like one of my areas that I would advocate for because of what the agencies have stated and within their plans.
Well, thank you. You have another question,
Julie? One more comment along these lines, and maybe I can get some clarification of it, or just if my memory is incorrect, maybe Tracy might be able to help out. What I'm remembering is that when the national folks were here doing the evaluation report for Access, it was very praiseworthy and lots of really positive comments. And there was this one area that they brought up, which was this very area. And they were feeling that this community had lots of instances, I don't know how to say it, lots of instances of the lack and lots of concerns that they had about that, which they brought to the attention of the folks that day, as I recall. So I wondered if maybe that's something worth thinking about.
Well, I think we're moving to, I think as Chandra alluded to, the sustainability part of the Access work. And so this work is at the core, cultural competency and the infusion of cultural competency across the board is, I mean, we talked about disparities and disproportionality and all those things. This is at the crux of it. And so we're going to have some honest conversations. We're going to have the data through our evaluation to talk about its impact. And so I think this is very appropriate that the Mental Health Board has honest conversation about what this means. So a few months ago, we talked about, are we getting what we're paying for from agencies and from our contracts? I think this falls directly in line with that. And we've got a long history of not wanting to address diversity and inclusion and how you infuse all of that stuff in everyday practices. And we are in position to take some leadership on this issue. It just becomes really an issue of how much do we want to take on and how much do we want to really require for the resources and expectation that organizations are working towards cultural inclusion. And I just say that in a broader sense. That means a number of different things, but who we serve them, how we serve, our board makeups, you know, all the things that Chandra addressed.
And Julian, I just want to also let you know that this is not just our funded agencies that are looking at this. This is, or people have reached out to me all over the county who are not even receiving funding from the Mental Health Board that are seeing it as a value. So people are definitely thinking about it. It's really looking at how do you do it and being willing to talk them through it with being able to, I guess it's having the tough skin to be able to hear it, because it's really, really challenging when you hear someone who says, I don't want to have access to poor people. That's just not what I want to do. They're not going to take advantage of it right. And you have to listen to those different opinions and being able to process it, not so that they'll see it my way, so that they can think about it differently. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much. It's the beginning of a conversation I hope we keep having.
Peter has some comments.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that we're going to have to do as we move toward the end of the federal grant, which is September of 2015, is make some decisions about what does sustainability look like. You know, there are some pieces that are floating around now, one of which is the Community Coalition. You know, and Tracy is, you know, at this point, we're talking to the city about him, actually, him and the Access Initiative taking over the coalition and running the coalition. The other area is the area of cultural competence. The fact that we got the federal grant or the state, the grant for Access Initiative allowed us to hire a position. It actually required a position. The question becomes, what do we do with it at the, you know, at the end? At this point, we contract with Prairie Center, and they have been the home of cultural competence. That's where Chandra lives at this point. The question becomes, as we look at sustainability, where is the best place for cultural competence to be? Should it, the position, if we, you know, and I'm going to recommend that we continue the position and sustain that position, but where should it be? Should it be in an agency in the community? You know, it's been, you know, it's with Prairie Center at this point. Should it be part of the mental health board? Some of the feedback that I've gotten is it might be better for it to be with the mental health board because people might pay more attention to it if it were here, if, you know, knowing that there is funding behind it. So, but I'm not in a position to make that decision. It's going to be a decision that this board is going to have to make. And we probably, you know, as we start developing this plan, we're going to have to, those are things that we should be thinking about. And, you know, as you know, I have met with a couple of, Tom Moore has expressed an interest and Julian Rappaport has been interested. I've been talking to them as individual board members about the sustainability plan. I think that we're going to have to expand that, those discussions. Probably we need to maybe put it on the agenda, at, you know, like immediately after the next funding cycle. This could be something that we could talk about in at the June meeting to, you know, start that discussion. But those are things that we're going to have to think about. You know, how can we be most impactful with it? And what should it look like?
Well, you know, I'm from the school business, and in my profession, data drives decisions. And we have this large evaluation component. So I don't know how we can talk about sustainability until we can start to get some feedback from the evaluation piece as to what's working about the process, what's not working. I mean, where are we going? I think as you talk, that evaluation component should be very much a part of what we're doing, what they've gathered throughout this process.
And for the sake of time, the evaluation team did provide a summary of their organizational assessment data of cultural competency. I asked them to provide that for you all, so that is for you all, that's in your packet as well.
I meant the overall effort of...
Absolutely. Yes. And I mean, I understand the overall value of it, and they are definitely providing the information for us. It's lots and lots and lots to comb through.
Well, we have two different components, don't we, Peter? Or Tracy, don't we have two different components? We have a national evaluation, and then we have another evaluation.
Well, I think the great part about our evaluation that we've been able to craft here locally is we're measuring a number of things. Mm-hmm. And so we've done an organizational assessment, which will give us a piece of information. We are evaluating our services and how we implement wraparound services and those types of things. So. We've done a community assessment. We've done a number of different evaluation, I don't want to say tools, but we've gone through a number of different levels of the evaluation. So we have another meeting on Monday. So we're getting and starting to gather it at this point. So I think we'll have a number of things to use as a catalyst for conversation.
Well, I just have one other question. Are the plans for these agencies online?
Yes, they
all
are.
Their cultural competence.
Yes, they are.
Are online.
Yeah, when I say they're online, they're, you know, available
at their
through
agencies.
The system. Through the system. No, I don't think it's online like for public viewing, but
definitely, as looking and perusing through websites, you definitely see a change in who they're serving, the population that they're serving, and most of all, how to access certain things that show the cultural responsiveness. But the actual plan is not necessarily for the public to, give scrutiny to. If people want to access it, they can contact the mental health board because it's a part of their application process. But I think there are certain aspects of it where that wouldn't be relevant to everyone that's not within that agency. So it's on the system, but it's not available for the public.
Well, I guess I don't know why people who are funded through the taxpayers' dollars wouldn't have transparency. So a plan is a plan, just like a service plan. So I would not see why they would object to having everybody in this community access it, because the community is the best judge of how the services are being delivered, because they're the clients, the customers. But anyway, I think that we should look at that. Okay, Lynn.
Just back to what Pete was saying about sustainability piece. I can speak more for the DD agencies, obviously. And as she said, the cultural competency plans are uploaded as part of the application, so they are all available. You can all look at them if you want. They're a little bit tough to download sometimes, so it might just be easier. Your point is important, that's a separate point, that they should be public, and some of the agencies are quite proud of their cultural competency plans, and I think one of them does make it public, one of the DD agencies. But you're able to look at them, but if it's easier, I could just make copies, because they're not always easy to download. We sort of have to mess with different file types to get them. So anyway, when I look at the cultural competency plans, I have, over the last few years, often called Chandra for help if I see that somebody's really not moving ahead, or I'm not sure how they are presenting this plan to address, you know, the issues that we have put out there. So she's been very helpful in meeting with the agencies that I've identified. And last year, Trace Parsons came to one of my site visits to talk about a specific problem and some specific solutions with one of the very small funded programs on the DD side. And my impression is that we're really in such beginning stages for some of them that it has been really nice to have these resources. I don't analyze the quarterly progress reports because I'm out of my league with them. I mean, I could learn. But it's been really nice just to be able to look at the demographics reports instead and say, I don't see any big improvements here, and then call for help or tell the agencies that they need to reach out to Chandra for help. I've really valued that. And you know, the idea of it coming to a close in a year is, it's too soon.
I know we're trying to end the conversation, okay. But since Darlene's been here helping with the presentation, I'll just use the RPC as an example. I had a chance to go and, first of all, observe Chandra conduct a training with the RPC that has been one of the organizations in the forefront of working on their cultural competency internally. And so it was a rich conversation around with a diverse member of the RPC staff, conversations that you don't have an opportunity to have as an organization. As they were talking about the energy program that they operate and staff's perceptions of the clients and the issues of the clients and what it's like to serve them, and just to have that rich internal conversation, it doesn't take place within organizations. And so I applaud the RPC for having Chandra out. I know she's been out to a number of other organizations as well, but how much we want to take on that with that is really the important part for this board to think about down the road, because the impact can be significant and huge. So it's one thing to have plans. It's one thing for them to report on their plans. It's another for them to be actually using these as operational tools within their organizations.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I do. I have a comment.
because I'm housed, and I'll be quick, because I'm housed at Prairie Center, I've been able to utilize those skills in helping them as well. And as a former employee there.
Excuse me, if you're going to talk about the merit of their competency plan, I would love to hear Mr. Swardini tell me about it.
What do you want to know?
I mean, you're the agent.
We value.
You're the agency. You value diversity. So if you have something to add, I would love to hear it from you.
Well, I think it's been a process, and it's been one that has been engaged by our board, and our board has really looked at the diversity within themselves in recruitment, and also looking at the diversity of the people that we serve. So I think that the awareness of the cultural plan, the board is more aware of it than they ever have been in the past. I think our staff is more aware of it than they've ever been in the past. They've been engaged in processing that. Having Gail be the spearhead of the whole thing has been another one of those things through extra duties as assigned. But it's really fulfilling our mission in that our diversity in our community is that if we don't, we're not really reaching the clients, and that's what we're really about. So we've been fortunate to have Chandra in our building because it's just not more than, you know, the reporting requirement or the contractual, but day-to-day living. And that's what we value with her. We get a lot more out of it. And I want to tell you that also that as the president of the IATA board is that through my experience with Chandra is that we're addressing it at the IATA board level where a number of agencies, 60-plus, that are there are primarily white, you know, CEOs at a table. And so I've been able to bring that awareness to them, and Chandra's going to help us with that. So it's reaching out further than just Champaign-Urbana.
Very good. And you can encourage some of our other agencies to report down the road, too. We would love to hear about the progress during some of our meetings, wouldn't we?
I'm done. I know it's time.
Well, okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you.
You are welcome.
Okay. We have one more old business piece. It's the 1115 concept paper that Peter talked about earlier. It's actually in our packet, but if you would like to comment on it, you can. Okay. Do we have any board announcements tonight? Looks like everybody's ready to go home, right? Well, we can have a motion to adjourn. A second?
Second.
Okay, we're in favor of an adjournment. Thank you.
Thank you.
I need your pen. You need to sign. Thank you.
I did. Very interesting.